Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. We're glad you're here. This is a program where we talk about business. We talk about the government and its relationship to business. We talk about organizations and their relationships to business. We talk about success and we talk about failure. We try to learn from it and we try to do it all and have a good time while we're at it. Welcome to this week's edition. By the way, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. And this program is podcast on eddiemayfield.com. And again, we're glad you're here. Our guest today is the head of the executive director of the Georgia Utilities Contractors Association. Her name is Vicki McReynolds. Actually, Vicki, your name has changed and it's Consiglio now, but you're still known as Vicki McReynolds. And welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And Vicki has a guest with her today, one of her executive assistants, Scott Brumbelow. Scott, how are you? Good to have you here.
Doing great, Eddie. Thank you for having us here.
Well, you're welcome. You know, let's talk a moment about you head an organization of businesses, and some of these businesses are quite small, and that's my background, Vicki. And even in aside from the day-to-day business of the Georgia Utility Contractors Association, what kind of concerns do those small business people voice to you just in your day-to-day conversations with them?
Eddie, the concerns that I hear most often are just the regulations, the things that it takes to stay in business, the paperwork, just from the employment side, you know, to just actually doing your job and just staying ahead of that curve and being able to pay your bills. But also in paying your bills, getting paid by those folks that owe you money and trying to collect that. And then if you're hit, you know, with the heavy regulation, and we're in construction, so we're heavily regulated. So if you do wrong, you're going to get the fines, and you're going to be hit hard with that. And so trying to stay above all of that and trying to do the right thing, it's sometimes difficult to stay in business. And it's a great business if you're in it and you know what to do and you're there. But if you get hit hard and like this, the last economy, it's really difficult, and a lot of them had to close their doors.
You know, I think, Vicki, a lot of people involved in business that hear the term overregulation that may ring kind of dull on their ears because they've never had to face it. But for any of us in business, regulations cost money. I don't know anyone in business that thinks there should be no regulations, but the cost of compliance. Some of these regulations, some of which do appear to a lot of us to be arbitrary and enforced rather casually at times, and at other times come in and sort of crack your knuckles on something, all of which cost a lot of money. And I think what a lot of us in business have asked for from our government are to be clear, at least make the regulations clear where we don't have to get an attorney to figure out what it is we're supposed to be doing. And how to do it. I know that OSHA comes into play a lot. And Scott, you've done a lot of dealing with OSHA directly, haven't you?
Yes, we've had our safety training at the Georgia Utility Contractors Association is one part of the association, as well as to helping contractors, small businesses especially, in some of the informal conferences in dealing with these regulations and our proposed penalties.
You know, Vicki, one of the things I want to talk to you about later, because you wrote an article that I read about third-party bill collectors and how to deal with them. That's something that all of us at one time have had to deal with. And really, as a small business guy, both not only from paying bills, but also having to collect, as you mentioned earlier, when you do work for somebody, you know, you do the work. There's all the job involved and all the mess with that, getting it all done, getting it done safely, getting it done and not violate any regulations while you're doing it. You get it all done, you send them an invoice, and then you have to get paid. And I think a lot of people not in business don't understand what a bother that sometimes can be just to get your money back.
You know, and sometimes, it's 60, 90, and 120 days. And it all depends if you're in the private sector or if you're in the public sector.
Right.
And, if you're in the private sector, obviously it helps to know who your clients are and things like that. But in the public sector, you're protected, obviously, because it's taxpayer money, and you have somewhat of a guarantee there. But
right.
but you know, there's checkoff list, and if it's not done correctly, and the engineer doesn't sign off on it, you won't get your money for a long time. And In this past economy, I mean, we have pipe in the ground that people are using in developments that went belly up, and we have contractors that never got paid for that, and they don't get their money.
That is such a shame. We've had, even in our business, I mean, I'm in the electronic motor drive business, and we'll do the same thing. We'll sell a motor drive to someone or repair one for someone, and it's being used somewhere, but for whatever reason, they can't pay you. They've either declared bankruptcy or something of that sort, and so basically what you have put out there is being used by someone, and the only person not paid is you. That's very frustrating. I'm sure it's the same. It is for me. I know it is for anyone.
Well, this it's very interesting. We have and I didn't bring that with me, we have a Senate bill that we've introduced, and basically it was a reflection of this past economy where a lot of our contractors did work for development, and where the banks ceased to, you know, loan the money, and we didn't realize it. Our company, when I say we, I'm talking corporately about some of our members. They didn't realize that the money had been cut off, and so they would continue to work out in these developments. So then, what happens? The banks stopped loaning money, and we didn't know it, and we continued to do this, only to find out there was no money to be paid for the materials that had been bought, the labor to put in the pipe, and the supplies, the equipment that had to be paid for. And we're not talking about thousands of dollars. We're talking about millions of dollars that was lost. Sometimes it was billions of dollars. And so we did a survey and about the different developments that were in the community, and I'm talking about the state of Georgia that went belly up, and the thousands that were lost. And so we introduced a bill, and basically what we were asking was if there's a development and it's going, the banks are not going to loan any more money, let us know so we can stop work. But for some reason, there's a privacy issue in the state of Georgia, and they're not allowed to let you know that someone's going belly up. So you're going to continue work. And so we're kind of working through that out. Now, there's a law in Florida that says that, you know, that works in Florida. But for some reason, it doesn't work in Georgia.
Well, that seems to make a lot of sense to me. I would think that allowing some contractor, who may in fact be a very small business who can't afford this at all, to continue to spend money when there's no way they're going to get paid, it seems just patently unfair. So I would think,
and especially if the bank knows that, the bank knows that, hey, I've got a contractor out there, and they're supposed to be, you know, watching these projects, and they just weren't doing it. And this was, you know, and I call it mowing and blowing, and when, you know, things were doing good, and everybody, you know, and it was just great, and you know, everybody's making money, you know, fist over hand, and they didn't worry about it. But now it's like all of a sudden the brakes were put on. So that's something we're going to try to take care of now that things are slowed down a little bit.
Vicki, you've alluded already to this in when we're talking, but to take just a moment for those of us that perhaps aren't familiar at all with the Georgia Utility Contractors Association, tell us what it is that you guys do and what your goals are.
Okay, well, we're a construction trade association, and so kind of put it in perspective, there's associations for just about everything that's out there. You know, most folks are familiar with teachers associations and things like that. So we're a trade association, quote unquote, a special interest type in construction. It's not building construction, it's not highway construction, but it's underground utility construction.
Right.
So anything that's you can say underground piping systems. And so basically, our contractors, our members, are made up of folks that do public work and private work. Public works would be something that you put out to bid by a city, a county, or a state, or federal government. Private work is, you know, private developments and things like that. So your Walmarts and your Costco's and whatever and so forth. So and then it's of a wide variety. When you say utility, a lot of folks think we're a utility company, but we work for, you know, different utilities. So, you know, we could be putting in gas and we can be putting in electric. So we work for the private companies, which is your Georgia Powers and your Atlantic Gas Lights and things like that. So then we're not so much cabling companies, but we do have members that are there.
Right.
But predominantly, we're water and sewer contractors. So basically, we're putting in your water and your sewer. And so we do have a lot of, you know, public contracts and things like that. We're site developers. So that's who our members consist of. So in saying that, you base your needs as an association on what your members need. And in our association, like most associations, we have a board. And those board members are from the members of your association. And so we get our direction from the board as far as what they want to see and what they want to have done. So basically, we are kind of, you know, segmented into different departments, and we have a membership department, and we have the safety and education department, and we have, you know, communications department, and then we have our administrative, like our bookkeepers and right. events and things like that. So our goals are based upon of what our board and our president for that leadership year, what they envision, what they want. So after, you know, years and years and years of saying, okay, this board wants this and this, you know, we don't really get rid of the services, but we do build upon those and add value to the services that we already have.
You know, I think a lot of folks, and although I've been around a lot of this myself, but a lot of folks, I think, don't understand what a blessing it is to have underground utilities and where they are. The electrical area is just one area. I'm in an electrical business, but I was in Russia not too long ago, and if you go in the older sections of Moscow where all the power lines are still overhead, it's this mishmash of electric lines everywhere, and it looks like the 1920s here in the United States, whereas, you know, nowadays your members are putting all that stuff underground where it's a lot more, it's not only a lot safer, it's more reliable under there, and the second thing is there's just the site part of it is so much nicer looking, so they're doing a good job, I think, getting that done.
Yeah, we hope so.
You know, I'm also sitting here thinking you're the I've never actually dug into an electrical line, but I did years ago when I first got married. I was in my backyard doing some things with a post hole digger, and I got down really deep in the hole I was digging. I chopped into to an electrical line. I got the phone company all mad at me, but that actually, well, I'll talk a little bit about that. That's actually this call before you dig stuff is really a big deal, isn't it?
It is, and I'm going to give a shout out to my. One of my peers, Claudette Campbell, who heads up the Georgia 801, so you'll have to have her on your show one time.
All right, good deal. Well, we're going to talk more about this as the time goes on. I think the utility contractors there in Georgia, just like the businesses everywhere, face many of the same problems, but do so much good for our society, not just in terms of who they hire, but in making a better quality of living for those of us here in Georgia. You are listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield, and we'll be back in just a moment.
She was terminally driven. She held him up and he held him
up. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We are talking today with Vicki McReynolds, who's the Executive Director of the Georgia Utilities Contractors Association. And in the studio with us is her assistant, Scott Brumbelow, and we're glad both of you guys are here. Vicki, before the break, you were talking to us about what it is that you guys do, and I think I interrupted you before we were finished there. And can you continue that a little bit? Just tell us what it is that your organization is about.
So some of the services that we offer to our members, you know, why would you want to belong to an association? I mean, what is that all about? Because it's, you don't have to belong to an association.
Right.
So how do we get, you know, people to join? How do we get people to engage in our association? So we offer a varied array of services. And one of those is, because we are heavily regulated, is safety and educational training that the contractors would have to have. And so we do that through discounts. So if you're a member, you're going to get a bigger discount than if you were a non-member. And we provide, like I said, value services. So one of the things that we could do, like, if you know, we have, you know, special, you know, cell phone plans and, you know, travel plans, you know, affinity programs like a lot of folks have. One of the things that we've started, because several years ago, you know, people just kept asking for, do you have a health benefit plan? Do you have a health benefit plan?
Right.
And it was soft in the state of Georgia at the time, and we never did step up to the plate. But we did join with the Home Builders Association, and we have a health plan now that we can offer to our members. We just started a new 401k multi-employer plan, and then we also are starting, we're combining with a company called Bituminous, and we're offering a workers' comp, general liability, automotive, and marine land for our members. And basically, you know, they these are all benefits that help the members, that help companies where they might not get those same services if they were not a member. And so we can offer those, you know, discounted services. We can offer, you know, value added services. So these are some of the things that we do. We have, you know, newsletters, obviously, that put out, you know, the new regs, and we have, you know, the website and things that folks can go on to. But for the most part, I think it's the educational part and this, you know, keeping them abreast of, you know, the new regulations and what's going on and you know, am I supposed to be doing this? And because there's so many rumors out there on the job site. If you've got a worker, you know, somebody might come up to you and say, hey, did you hear about this? This is happening, you know, and it's not necessarily, you know, not that it's not true, but it's just like a tidbit. So they don't really understand what the regulation's all about. So they may be trying to do half of it right, but not the whole thing. So I think, you know, for us, that we call it a one-stop place. We provide you with the information. So we don't tell you how to do your job. We just say, hey, OSHA reg says this.
Right.
Or, you know, the PSC says this is what you need to do. You know, so we just, you know, here's the document. You know, you can read, we can kind of help you interpret.
You know, we get into that with a national electric code, which is sort of a national code that everyone follows, you know, that you have to do electrically. And we'll have someone say, oh, you can't do that. That's the code requires this. And we go look it up and say, no, it doesn't. Doesn't say that.
Right. So a lot of times out on the job site, you know, you have these people that say, oh, you know, you can't do that, or you're supposed to do this. And actually, you know, that costs money if you're sitting there trying to do something you're not even supposed to be doing. I mean, it's like, you know. So and then if you're out there working, you're doing what you think that you're supposed to be doing, and all of a sudden you find out, oh, no, here's a regulator, and he's coming on your job site and saying, oh, well, you're supposed to be doing it this way. And you're like, what? So we just want to make sure that, you know, everyone understands, you know, what their responsibilities are, and they can do their job, you know, effectively, but also safely. I mean, that's why we have a full-time safety department. That's where Scott comes in. He makes sure that these guys are on that side of it once the laws have been passed. And one of our mottos is we love to educate instead of regulate and legislate.
Right.
I mean, that's his big motto for us. So, but that's what we do. Hopefully that helped answer some of the questions out there.
You know, I think every business in every area of expertise has its own challenges and so forth. And you've already alluded to a lot of them, but I would just think, and I was joking about it earlier, but in reality, you know, there are so many underground nowadays in an urban area like Atlanta. It's astonishing how many underground utilities are buried even in people's backyard or crossing through their property, and they do have a map of it when they bought the house, but that's been a long time ago. They don't know that's there, and they decide to get their brother-in-law's backhoe and go in the backyard and put in something. Next thing you know, they got big problems, don't they?
They do, and there is a law in Georgia. It's called Before You Dig. It's Georgia 811. It's very easy. You just dial 811. If you're a homeowner or whoever, if you're putting a shovel in the ground, obviously, if it's not mechanized, you don't have to call. But if you're using mechanized equipment, you do have to call.
Right.
There's no excuses. And I'll give you a story. In my own yard, I was having some trees removed. And I asked the tree service, I said, you going to call before you dig? What? No, this is on your property. I don't have to do that. I said, oh, but I'm going to do it for you because you're not going to dig in my yard. And you're talking about, you know, a tree, but they're doing stump grinding. So that is going, you know, you're penetrating the ground. So sure enough, I had it located, and there was an electrical line running right underneath one of those trees. So you can imagine if they would have taken that, whatever it is, that stump grinder and grinded and it hit that electrical line. So that's not really funny, but what you're trying to say is I helped save someone's life. So that made me feel better. And because of that, he was like, you know what? You're the second person that's told me that I had to do that. I'm going to do that from now on. So any little thing that we can do, but really, folks, I mean, it's very serious. You don't know what's underground. Even gas lines, you can hit it with a shovel, and it's very, very dangerous. And, people cut their telephone lines all the time, their cable lines, so they call the cable company.
Or even if you pop a water main in your yard, that's not a minor
thing.
It's
not fine.
That's huge.
So, you know what, and it's a free call. And so, you know, it's one thing that's one of the things that we preach and teach at the association and with our members is call before you dig. And you know, it's a great service. And like I said, it's free of charge, and the utilities, they'll be happy to come out and locate that for you. So, do that, but there are a lot of underground utilities out there. So when you see, if you see lines on the street, the yellow and the red and the white, you know, oh yeah, they've marked those lines. That's underground utilities out there. A lot of people don't like to see those orange paint and that yellow paint. The yellow paint's the gas. That's the one you really look out for. But that's why, because if you see that in your yard, a lot of people get mad because they put paint in the yard. There's flags. A lot of kids will pull up those flags. And we go to the high schools and the elementary schools, and we try to teach them. Those are for your protection, so please don't pull them up.
You know, the technology of putting in these underground utilities, just as somebody that's sort of around machines a lot, it interests me. But, you know, it used to be you had to get basically something and trench up a whole ditch all the way through. But, you know, nowadays you have these machines that basically punch the ground horizontally and drill horizontally. So and you can do it with not that much disturbance in the area you're going into. And I think it's such a neat thing that folks can do that nowadays in there. I think we have about a minute. Talk to us about leadership for a minute. You know, I know you're active politically, you're active in church, and you're also active in an organization where the members of your organization are volunteers in a way. So talk to us about the difference, perhaps, very quickly, in leadership, leading people that you perhaps are paying to lead, or leading people that are volunteers.
Well, you know, I like to look at it this way. It's called pride and ownership. So the association, I don't own the association. It's owned by the members, and right. So it's their association. So, and I always go back to them, you know, what is it that you want? What is it that you need? Because that's what we want to deliver to you. So, and I get a lot of the input from the board and the committees that the members sit on. So if they never told me what it was that they needed, how could I, you know, help, you know, service them? So that's how you get folks to step up the plate. You give them that ownership. You give them those roles to be responsible for. What is it that you want us? What safety do you need? What safety classes do you need? What educational classes do you need to help you do your job, you know, efficiently and effectively? So that's where all that comes in. You know, the same with any church. You know, there's needs, you know, in society and in churches. There's needs, you know, in the political arena and so forth. And so when it comes to fundraising, you know, what do you want us to see get done? Because we can't get it done without the money.
Right. And I think part of it, also what you're talking about is your organization is here to serve the members. And as leaders, we're there to serve the people we lead. You really can't be a leader in any other way except doing that. And you know, I think it's the famous John Maxwell saying is that leadership is really influence as much as anything. You're listening to Driven to Business. Plenty more to come, so stick around. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm your host, Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Vicki McReynolds and Scott Brumbelow about the Georgia Utility Contractors Association. Scott, to talk to you just for a moment, you do a lot of safety instructing. You know, in our company, we face some mechanical safety issues in our business too, in the electronic motor drive business. We will do around large rotating machinery and so forth. But a lot of ours is electrical, so we do a lot of electrical safety. You know, be arc flash, all that kind of thing. Don't get hurt. But with the guys that are in your organization, what's their primary safety concerns?
Well, we have several. As you mentioned there, the arc flash, electrical. That's just one part of our daily struggles. You mentioned the trench safety as well as a trench-less safety, which right. is the boring applications. We're faced with just a whole plethora of safety concerns. But I would mostly say excavations is our biggest concern out there, because anytime that we hear there's an excavation death or injury, we are concerned, because we're looking out for our members as well as those that are non-members of the state association to provide them with safety training.
You know, you do occasionally hear, and I, unfortunately, I've never been around this at all, but you will occasionally hear that where like a trench has fallen in on someone or something like that. What? Just give us a brief rundown, other than don't get in that trench. I mean,
oh, no. First off, as Vicki had mentioned earlier, call before you dig is one of the first steps that needs to be taken. And then to have a successful trenching operation, there's several things that can be done. Putting a trench box in is a basic method.
Is that like a wall?
Yes.
Okay.
It's actually a metal box.
Okay.
And that's one option. Actually, removing the dirt, sloping it back is an option.
Right.
Or put up some hydraulic shoring, which serves as a go-between of the two.
Right.
And once that is done, then it could be safe to enter, but there's other things that could happen, water hazards, electrical hazards. We actively train our people in all OSHA standards, which is very important. As far as trenching, to get to access the trench, the ladder comes into play. One of the beauties of the association is we offer training in English and Spanish.
Right.
And because we do know there is a large Hispanic construction population. So to reach out to everyone to enter trenches safely, perform the work safely, and go home every day in the same condition they came into work is our ultimate goal.
Do you find, and I'll, this may be a bit of a rhetorical question, but do you find, you know, most of us, when we're given safety instructions, it's not that we never heard that before.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, even at your house, we all know better than to prop ladders up against unstable things and climb up them, or worse, to stand in a chair when you should go get a ladder. We all know better than this.
Yes, we do.
But we still do it. So is a lot of safety is about reminding people of the obvious, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's actually, you've got to ingrain it in an individual that is the only way to access the situation to do it safely. Is it going to take a little bit more time? Possibly. Is it going to cost a little bit more money? Possibly. But you cannot put a price on a human life.
You can't. Or and even if it doesn't take your life, the idea of being in a wheelchair the rest of your life,
right,
and deteriorating your ability to make a living, perhaps what you were doing or anything else, by the fact, and that's what we tell our folks is it we don't do any jobs that are worth your life or worth you being in a wheelchair the rest of your life. So let's nothing's in that big of a hurry. Just back off and take the time for that.
There is an association, I don't want to call it an association, it's a group of construction safety individuals. It's called the Struck by Alliance, and it's an OSHA initiative. But basically it's watching out when you're driving on the highway and you see the construction barrels, you know, reminding yourself,
right,
you know, to slow down during that construction zone.
Is that what that means?
Right, and that's what that means. And so there's a big emphasis on that because you'd be surprised the folks that just, you know, I said, go barreling through the barrels. And there are folks that are working out there, and cars are going, you know, 70, 80 miles an hour through those barrels. So just remind everyone when you see that's someone's life there on the side of the road. So be real careful, be cautious, and those are regulations that are set up by the, you know, federal DOT and Georgia DOT, and our guys, you know, have to do that. But Scott was talking about the safety. We're so safety-minded, it's hard for us to go by a job site or drive down the road with, you know, when you see something, you want to stop and say, y'all need to fix that, you know,
right.
It's like it's so embedded in you. And you know, even, you know, in church or, you know, if I go to a business and there's a cord, you know, going across the floor and it's not taped down, you know, I want to say, can you please just take this cord down so, you know, folks won't trip on it? Because I'll be the first one to trip on it.
Right.
I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm like this. So I have to be safe for myself, you know, that sort of thing. I do have a pink hard hat, by the way, so you can't see that. But I do have all the equipment when I go on a job site. But safety is everywhere. Construction is everywhere, and even just not just for the workers, but just for the general public.
I think I'd get beat up if I went to most job sites with a pink hard hat, so I have to be careful about it.
I get a lot of attention with that pink hard hat.
Well, you can get away with it. I don't think I could. Hey, you know, to sort of poke at you politically a little bit here. You and I are both conservative politically, but utility contracting is a business that depends a lot on public. On public spending, and many of us, including you, I would think, have concerns about public spending. Tell us how do you approach that?
Well, you know, you pay your tax dollars, and you want to make sure that they're going to good services. So you know, you got to balance, you know, what's a good service versus a bad service. So you know, what is it that what's needed? You know, if your city or county has, you know, not to knock a public pool, but you know, if you have a public pool and that's costing thousands and hundreds of dollars, you know, to keep up, and you need infrastructure improvements, which is roads or, you know, water and sewer to your community. I mean, those are things that I think your city council and your, you know, local, your counties and your cities, hold them accountable for how they're spending that money. I mean, is it on the services that are needed? Or is it on, you know, I call it foo-foo things, you know, and you know, we all want parks and we all want swim pools. And
you know, I sometimes joke, so, you know, I'm a conservative. I don't really like a lot of money being spent publicly, but I also do like running water.
That's correct.
And
everyone
I like
does.
When my toilet flushes. It goes somewhere out of my house.
That's correct.
You know, it
That's
gets
correct.
Taken care of.
Well, and a lot of the regulations come from, you know, folks who, you know, and I don't want to pick on environmentalists, you know, because everybody, you know, loves trees and water, and we all want clean water, and we want fresh water and things like that. But I went to a forum one time, and I was like, you know, who here came in a horse and buggy?
Right.
Who did not ride on the, I mean, who lives in a tent? No one raised their hand because they all enjoy the Publix and they all enjoy the roads that we drive on and the cars, the big fancy cars. I drove there in the SUV and I told them I drove in my big SUV.
Right.
I pay the gas for it. I'm leaving, I guess, a carbon footprint. Shame on me, but I'm keeping somebody in business. Okay, so this is the thing. You know, we all love those conveniences, but, you know, how I balance that is, you know, and we do. We go to Congress and say, hey, we want money for, you know, clean water. We want money for, you know, infrastructure for, you know, water and sewer to our communities. I think those are important things. You know, like you said, you don't care where your water comes from. You just want to make sure when you turn your faucet on that you want the water. You don't care what happens when you flush your toilet. You want to make sure it goes somewhere beside your house.
Right. There is so much of the underlying support fabric of society that I think that can be very much out of sight, out of mind, and you forget it's there. And you really do need those things maintained. Like sewer maintenance is not a minor thing. That needs to be maintained. You don't want sewage leaking into the groundwater. When you go to a sewage treatment plant and you want that plant to work and not be putting raw sewage. And, you know, the state of the art of that is really incredible. You know, these guys can turn out water. I'll be quite honest. They will challenge you to drink it. I'm not going to do that. But I do believe them when they tell me that they're putting water back in some of the rivers that was cleaner than when it came out of the river.
That is a correct statement. That is a correct statement. And with the systems that we have now, I mean, I commend the state of Georgia, you know, for that. And I commend our governor who that's the forefront for him. He's putting millions of dollars into Georgia's infrastructure through GFA and these are loan programs. And see,
right.
That's the other thing I wanted to talk about. These programs, these federal government programs that help our water infrastructure and our, you know, sewer infrastructure, those are loan programs that the county, cities and counties get. So it's not like money's just being doled out of taxpayer money. It's a loan program and it's paid back with interest.
Right,
so
right.
Why wouldn't you do that?
Right, exactly. You know, that leads to a question I was going to ask you about. In our company, we do a fair amount of service in the water and the wastewater business. That's just something we do a fair amount of business with. And I know that's just one little part of like the things that you guys do, but just in general, for the members of your organization and as viewing them as businesses, what's the overall state of the utility contracting business in Georgia? Is it good?
Well, it's getting better. It was pretty poor there for a while,
right.
The last 3 years. I don't think 2014 is going to be as good as what we had hoped. But so what happened is when your housing went belly up,
right,
then development stops, and then so you don't have your communities and, you know, infrastructure, and then if your housing stops, then cities and counties can't sell water, and there's no, you know, need for the sewage and things like that. So it really, I'm going to say, Georgia kind of dried up. We had a drought and utility.
Yeah, we took a hard. I don't think that I, along with a lot of other people, I don't think I realized how dependent the Atlanta metro area particularly was on housing. I don't think I knew it was heavily dependent on it, but I don't believe I knew how dependent everything around here was on that until it really hit on us.
And when it did, it hit hard. And you don't understand, it hits every segment. So,
right,
you know,
exactly.
It's the concrete and steel and you know, all those, you know, different sectors that it hit. And so it's coming back because what happens then, the cities and counties don't have the ratepayers to pay for those
right.
improvements. So they have to have that unless they're getting loan programs. And like I said, I give shout out to our governor who's thoughtful enough to realize that, you know, our infrastructure is aging. And if you could see some of the pipes that your water is coming through, you would demand that it get changed and
right.
that money would go into it.
You know, there's an ancillary of that goes along with it. We've interviewed Governor Deal in the program here, and we like him. He one thing he's done a good job is attracting business to Georgia. And one of the ways you do that is by working on your infrastructure and being sure that when a company decides to move here and open a facility here, that the infrastructure is there for those folks to be able to operate their plant, and as a result of that, we end up with jobs who then do go to stores and buy groceries, and they buy homes, and they buy the whole thing, and it all begins to work. So I view this whole thing as a connected situation, including what your folks do down there. You are listening to Driven to Business. We have another segment, so don't go anywhere. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be back. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. Keep in mind, we are streaming live all over the world on biz1190.com. A podcast of today's program will be on eddiemayfield.com. So go there and check that out. We're talking with Vicki McReynolds and Scott Brumbelow. Scott, or actually, let me address this to Vicki. Vicki, we had talked during the break about finding skilled employees, and that's something that I know that I've talked with a number of folks here on the program about. Is that, you know, for all it seems ironic that with all the news given to the unemployment rate, I know that companies like us that depend on hiring skilled people, we don't find them that easily when we go look for them. And I think I'll just be willing to bet that your members have the same problem.
You know, and that very true. There was such an emphasis on pushing folks to go to four-year college, and I'm not going to get into that, you know, I'm for education all the way. But you know, some people just, they're not four-year college people,
right?
And some people want to work outside. They want to be that hands-on. They're, you know, entrepreneurs. And a lot of the entrepreneurs that I've met don't even have a four-year degree.
And you know what? It can make very good economics. A skilled tradesman can make good money.
That's correct. So, again, shout out to Governor Deal and his vision for, you know, in seeing that. And he created the Go Build Georgia initiative.
Right.
And so basically, you can go on, is it www.gobuild.org or .com?
.com.
And students, teachers, parents, employers can go on that website, and basically it's a focus on getting students back to the skilled trades, whether it's carpentry, plumbing, you know, bricklaying, electrical, equipment operator, you know, pipe layer. So all of these skills, as work starts picking up, folks are going to start hiring, and they need workers, and they need workers like now. So, you know, if you're looking for a job, there's jobs to be had out there. So get your foot in the door. You might start out as a laborer. You're not going to start out, you know, making $30 an hour right off the bat. You're going to have to work your way up. But if you like that hard work and you can get in that trench and you can do that, it's on the job training. I mean, and these guys pay good money. So
you can also, as many, many people have done, you can learn that skill and eventually own your own business if that's what you want to do. That's a great thing about America, if you learn to do that.
That's
like
a great thing about construction, because
right,
you get in and you're going to be doing all, you know, kinds of, if you play it safe and do the right thing, like you said, and you're a go-getter and you get in there. One of the things I like to emphasize, too, is we are a drug-free workplace. And I know you're getting ready to have a good speaker that's coming up in some segments in the future. And we'd like to emphasize that, you know, if you're going to work in construction, you have to be drug-free. You cannot come impaired on the job site. It's too dangerous. We do drug testing. We promote that. And I can tell you, we have construction companies that work all over the United States. And it's sad to know that they can't find workers because they can't find people to pass a drug test.
Oh my goodness! I've never had that problems with that. But
I'm telling you, I mean, it's rampant, and they're getting people from Texas and California. I mean, God forbid that we'd have to get somebody from a different state to come and work because we can't find people to pass a drug test. So if you're out there and you're looking for a job, you know what? Just give us a call, because we can connect you with companies, but you got to be drug free. You got to be clean.
Yeah, stay out. If you're using drugs, don't apply.
Don't call us. That's right. Don't call us.
By the way, we will have on eddiemayfield.com, we will have the Georgia Utility Contractor Association link on there, so you can go there and you'll show you how to get in touch with Vicki and Scott and others. Vicki, let's talk about you a moment. If we can pull away from the organization just for a moment, you're obviously a successful woman in business. And without getting very political about this, tell us about any challenges that perhaps any women out there may be listening that want to be successful in business.
My recommendation is don't have a chip on your shoulder, because you're going to get it knocked off if you do. If people don't think that I've people have said things to me that were inappropriate. They have. I just don't carry a chip on my shoulder. You know, it's just, you can't legislate that morality. And folks, now, obviously, if someone is treating you like they shouldn't be treating you, I don't care if it's male or female, you need to say something to that person.
Right.
You need to report that. Report it immediately. I did teach sexual harassment in the workplace. To the construction, you know, in the construction industry, even taught it in a college.
I'm assuming you taught against it.
Yes, that's right. Not for it. Excuse me. Yeah, that's right. Oh well. Yeah. So, you know, I think everybody, probably male and female, has probably, you know, ran into something like that. But I just don't, you know. For me, you gotta understand, construction was an all male industry. And so, they took a chance on me and vice versa. But, for a female, I would say get into the construction industry because it's wide open for females. I mean, you know, some of your best operators, they say, or you're a female. There's no, you know, statistics for that, but I'm just saying some of my companies,
right. That's
what they told me because just the detail and that sort of thing. So, you know, the engineering side of it. So, it's wide open and this industry is great. But for me, I tell you, I love it because the folks that I work around, because they're conscientious, they're conservative, you know, they entrepreneurship, because like I said, a lot of them are small business owners and a lot of them are minority women business owned companies. So they like that free enterprise. They like that, you know, being able to make the money. And so it's out there. But I don't carry the chip on my shoulder, so I don't get it knocked off. But to say that, you know, that women can't, you know, break that glass ceiling, I just don't think it's a true statement. I mean, you can. There's ways to work around that. There's ways to, you know, to get where you need to be. And, you know, if I'm not making what my counterpart makes, I that's not what I focus on. I focus on what it is that I want to do, what makes me happy. And, you know, money's not necessarily the motivator as much as is the happiness in my job and what I want to do.
It's not that, but I think I just know that having been both an employee and an employer, people that are valuable to an organization as an employer, you absolutely don't want them going anywhere. So you tend to pay them all that you can. And do everything you can. You know, now, we don't have but a few minutes left, but you also are unusual in that at one time, you toured as a gospel singer. That's a little bit unusual. Tell us about that.
I did. Full-time gospel musician all over the southeastern United States. I started when I was 16 years old, and I just had this desire to sing, and I just started in my local church, and then, you know, just... recorded an album, and it's like a chapter.
Is it
in my
Southern
life.
Gospel type stuff, or
it's Southern gospel, being more contemporary now. You had to move along with what it is, but like singing in the choirs, Brooklyn Tabernacle, you know, type, you know, music.
Oh, wow.
So love it. So
I
like all types
of that.
Yeah.
Our church does a lot of the Brooklyn Tab stuff.
Yeah, love it. So and I like, you know, my kids, you know, did musicals at the Fox and stuff. So we're very musically oriented family. So. That's just something that I always wanted to do, and I did it. So there you go.
Well, I appreciate you being on our program today. Just in general, from your perspective, dealing with a bunch of small businesses, and not only small, but small, medium, and even some large businesses that are probably, I suppose, that are part of your organization there, are you in general, and you've already answered this a bit, but in general, are you optimistic in the short term about the contracting business here in Georgia? It appears to be coming up. We have just less than a minute, so I hate to rush you, but...
No, I mean it's we're coming back. It is, and I think it's not going to be like it was, you know, let's say the Wild Wild West. But we just with the fracking up in, you know, Ohio and Pennsylvania, and then with the, you know, with the governor's water, you know, initiative and things like that. I think that's going to be a big help to Georgia. Some of the, like you talked about, businesses coming to Georgia and the attraction with that. It's very helpful. It's going to come back slowly, but I think it's going to be better than before because it's going to be funded.
So I'm taking that as yes, you are optimistic.
Yes,
Vicki,
yes,
thank
yes,
you for
I
being
am.
Here. Scott, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Glad to see you guys. Tune in again next week for Driven to Business right here on Biz 1190, and we'll see you next week. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.